Good morning, everyone. Call to order the October 23rd, 2019 variance hearing. My name is Corey Teague. I'm the zoning administrator, and I'm joined by our executive secretary, Eva Atahera Taylor. Go over some general information regarding the order of presentation for the hearing. Sponsors and or project owners shall be allowed 5 minutes to present oral arguments on how the five findings are met to justify a variance. The applicant should also submit the declaration of posting when they approach to present their case. Any members of the public, both supporters and opponents to the proposed variance, shall be allowed 3 minutes each to speak. If there is any public testimony in opposition to a proposed variance, the applicant is allowed 3 minutes for rebuttal. I may ask questions of the applicant or members of the public. At the end of the item, I may close the public hearing and take the matter under advisement. I may continue the item to a future date, or I may indicate my action on the item today. Items listed on the consent calendar are matters considered routine by the zoning administrator, and if anyone would like to speak on one of these items, please step up when the item is called. Otherwise, it will be granted. There are currently 3 items listed on today's consent calendar. Public comment at the end of the hearing shall be allowed for items that are not on the agenda. Members of the public are allowed 3 minutes each to speak at that time. Regarding the criteria required to justify a variance, Planning Code Section 305C states that in order to grant a variance, the zoning administrator must determine that the facts of the case are sufficient to establish the following 5 findings: that there are exceptional and extraordinary circumstances applying to the property involved or to the intended use of the property that do not apply generally to other property or uses in the same class of district. Finding 2, that owing to such exceptional and extraordinary circumstances, the literal enforcement of specified provisions of the planning code would result in practical difficulty or unnecessary hardship not created by or attributable to the applicant or the owner of the property. Finding 3, that such variance is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of a substantial property right of the subject property possessed by other property in the same class of district. Finding 4, that the granting of such variance would not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to the property or improvements in the vicinity. And finding 5, that the granting of such variance would be in harmony with the general purpose and intent of the planning code and would not adversely affect the general plan. Please be aware that no decision is final until a decision letter is issued. And due to current backlogs, decision letters may take up to 2 months to complete from the date of this hearing. If anyone would like to receive a copy of a decision letter, please complete the sign-up sheet located at the far wall and provide your contact and mailing information. The zoning administrator's action to grant or deny a variance application may be appealed to the Board of Appeals within 10 days of the date of the decision letter, and again, no decision is final until that letter is issued. Private conversations are very disruptive to the hearing, so please conduct all such conversations outside the hearing room. The next variance hearing is scheduled for December 5th, 2019. I want to point out this is a Thursday instead of our regular fourth Wednesday of the month. We combine November and December into one hearing at the beginning of December due to the holidays. And again, our hearings are generally on Wednesdays, but our next hearing will be on December 5th, which is a Thursday. Audio recordings of variance hearings are also available on the Planning Department's website for hearings going back to January 1st, 2011. So with that, we'll now move on to today's calendar, and we'll start with a couple of housekeeping items. First, item number 3 for 1806 8th Avenue, case number 2019-0067-62-VAR, had its notification poster torn down for an extended period of time and therefore needs to be continued to the December 5th hearing. Second, the project sponsor for item number 8 for 2101 to 2103 Vallejo Street has requested a continuance to the December 5th variance hearing to allow additional time to work with neighbors. There are no other items proposed for continuance today, so we'll now call those 2 items proposed for continuance.
We have 2 items on our consent calendar. Item number 1, case number 2016-008904-VAR, 1786 San Jose Avenue, rear yard modification variances sought. Item number 2, case number 2018-008787-VAR, 4524 25th Street, front setback variance sought.
Is there any public comment on these items on the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing on those 2 items, and those items will be granted with the standard conditions.
Moving to our regular calendar, item number 4.
Sorry, we need to call the continued items.
Oh, you want me to call it?
Yeah.
Okay, there are two items in our continued items would be for December 5th, variance hearing. Item number three, case number 2019-006762 VAR, 1806 to 1810 8th Avenue, lot size variance sought. Item number eight, case number 2018-012611 VAR, 2101 to 2103 Vallejo Street, rear yard variance sought.
Is there any comment on those items proposed for continuance? Okay, seeing none, then those items will be continued to the December 5th hearing, and we can move on to our regular calendar.
First item on our regular calendar, item number four, case number 2018-004200 VAR, 2828 Jackson Street, front setback variance sought. Is the project sponsor here? Project sponsor for 2828 Jackson Street.
So we can move that to the end of the calendar.
Moving to item number five, case number 2017-010670 VAR, 421 Walnut Street, rear yard variance sought. Project sponsor for this project? 421 Walnut Street. Are you this project sponsor?
I'm not a sponsor, but I'd like to speak
for this time. Sure. We will move on and come back to that item.
We'll
as
come
well.
Back to it. Item number six. Item number six, case number 2018-015482 VAR, 859 Elizabeth Street, rear yard variance sought. Project sponsor, you have 5 minutes. Please approach the mic. Yes.
I'm Ben Farrell. I'm the project architect. It's Todd Graham. He's the property owner. This is a relatively fundamental rear yard deck. The description that is in the variance here, the very brief language as to why we're here. This is a deck to replace rear stairs that were built as part of an expansion project in 1997. The way that the addition was represented in 1997 created a non-compliant condition by 3 feet, and we are adding a deck onto that 3 feet, so intensifying the non-compliant condition, which is my understanding of what triggered the variance. With that, we are also adding stairs, a circular stair from the deck at the first floor level to the second floor level in order for the residents of the top floor unit to maintain access to the open space in the rear yard.
Hopefully getting replace the old stairs with a deck.
Okay, thank you. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, close public hearing. I did have some quick questions regarding kind of the relationship of the proposed deck and access and the two different units. Is that something you could go over on the plans a bit? Because as you mentioned, the main difference, I mean, right now you have essentially kind of a balcony and stairway down.
Correct.
At the rear, what's the third floor and the top unit? And this that would essentially stay the same. The only real difference is you're adding the additional decking at the second floor. But I just want to make sure I understand how that would, you know, how that relates in terms of the access for the top unit and the relationship to the.
Well, let's clarify the nomenclature around story count here first, because that's important, especially when you're relating this to 134. The ground floor at the rear yard is equivalent to the basement in the house. Mm-hmm. The deck is equivalent to the first floor in the house. The stairs, the top of the circular stairs are equivalent to the second floor of the house. And then we have the third floor of the house, which is the attic. Mm-hmm. We would not be, this would be a whole different situation if we were in a four-story building. So the access now to the rear yard from the second floor is through the long wood frame stairs. They were built presumably in conjunction with the rear yard addition. I look at it and I can't come up with how the stairs didn't trigger variance back then, but nevertheless, here we are. The addition of the deck would alter those stairs and also intensify the rear yard. So once we're altering the stairs, there's a complying thing with non-complying structures where if you change more than 50%, you're supposed to get rid of the whole thing. So we're into that. You also have to maintain access to the rear yard open space for both units. Without the circular stair, we would not have that without going through the lower unit. And the lower unit fundamentally has access because they have stairs all the way down to the yard level at the basement. So maintaining the independent access is sort of part of this project.
Sure. So is the split of the two units in the building, again, looking at the rear, the lower two floors are one unit and the upper two floors are?
Correct.
Are separate floor. Okay. And so, and what's being proposed essentially to go from the upper unit to the rear yard, you kind of have to walk across the deck along the windows of the lower unit. Did you explore just having the spiral staircase go all the way to the ground? Or
No.
Okay. I'm just curious. I mean, sometimes we're a little sensitive to kind of creating awkward
It's not an ideal situation, and I get it. We have 25 foot width reduced to 22 when you keep the 3 foot setback on the side. We mm-hmm. have the existing firewall to the west property line, so right. we're utilizing that to protect the stairs from with the fire protection measures that are in place. So that's right. 1 hour firewall to top of guardrail. Mm-hmm. Any other stair configuration that worked with both the deck and the existing conditions took a larger percentage of the deck away. So I think we're in the, I'll guess, like 15-20% range with a 60-foot diameter circular stair, and we would have been more up around the 30-40% range with a straight run stair.
Okay. All right, thank you. I think what's being proposed is pretty minor. It's not a large expansion from what the existing condition is. We definitely encourage better access to required usable open space. And so for all those reasons, I would be inclined to grant the variance with the standard conditions. Thank you.
Moving to item number 7, case number 2019-005924 VAR, 400 Crescent Street, rear yard variance sought. Is the project sponsor for this case here? 400
The person helping us through the process is looking for parking.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'll move to number 8. Number 8 is, this is for the 2101 to 2103 Vallejo Street. This will be continued to December 5 variance hearing. So moving to item number 9. Case number 2015-006747 VAR. 202 Teddy Avenue, lot size variance sought. You have 5 minutes, sir.
Okay, ready. Good morning, Zoning Administrator Teague and Ava Marie. Thanks for hearing from us today. My name is Jeremy Schaub of Schaubly Architects, representing the owners of 202 Teddy Avenue. Subject site is a large corner lot on the northern edge of Teddy Avenue and Rutland Street, on a block bound by Campbell Avenue and Delta Street, zoned RH1 in the Viz Valley neighborhood. The lot contains an unhistoric, unsound single-family dwelling proposed for demolition. When the new owners came to us in 2015 about a project at the site, we noted a large number of substandard lots in the neighborhood. At a corner location, the required minimum size is 1,750 square feet. For our parcel, that would equal 2.85 lots. 22 nearby lots are below that threshold. We had originally proposed 3 equal lots, each requiring a variance for lot size of 1,666 square feet. But in consultation with RDAT, we shifted that to three-lot subdivision with only one substandard lot. So this is what we are now proposing. Move past that. So here's the existing lots, 50 by 100 feet. The existing building is in the back corner. This is now the three-lot subdivision we are proposing. The two parcels on Teddy would be 25 by 70 feet or 1,750 square feet, and the third lot along Rutland is 30 feet by 50 feet or 1,500 square feet. So it's shy by about 250, which means it's at 86% of the requirement. And here's our justification. 15 nearby lots are equal to the size of 1,500 square feet or smaller. And that's the red on this image. The yellow ones are other substandard lots below 1,750. So here's our subject site here. Just down the block, four substandard lots of 1,500 square feet. This is the same block as ours. Additional 1,500 and 1,750 square feet, square foot lots, four 1,500 square foot lots right there. And this is a block and a half away, 1,667, 1,700, 800 square foot lots. So for the variance findings, they're exceptional, extraordinary circumstances that this variance allows for creating two code-complying lots and one smaller lot, adding an additional housing unit at 86% of the lot, required lot area. The demolition and new construction also enhances the mid-block open space by shifting the rear yard closer to the center of the area. The literal enforcement of the planning code would only allow for 2.85 homes instead of three. But we feel these two code-compliant lots, homes would be out of scale with the surrounding neighborhood. The buildable area would allow for something about 5,000 square feet, whereas we're proposing homes that are 2,600 or 3,100, up to 3,100 square feet. 22 other corner lots on this map have substandard lot sizes, less than 1,750 square feet. 15 have lots equal to or smaller than our proposed smallest lot of 1,500 square feet. The lot area variance only affects our buildings. It doesn't affect anyone else, so there's no harm to any other properties. And it's in harmony with the master plan because this was reviewed and approved by the Residential Design Advisory Team. And most importantly, the mayor's policy on housing currently calls for increasing market rate housing units during this housing crisis. In conclusion, our goal in proposing these variances is to balance the lot areas and rear yard requirements with a large overall building area of an RH1 parcel. Requesting the variance for the size of the lots, but not the size of the buildings, this actually results in a smaller buildable area by about 300 square feet. The remainder of the project is fully code compliant. One new single family dwelling would be constructed on each lot while not deviating from the allowable massing. Each building would present as two stories at the street, with the third floor massing shifted back from the Teddy Avenue buildings as approved by RDAT. This variance process will ensure homes that are right-sized and affordable by design. This small-scale infill housing will add to the revitalization of this district, and we believe this trade-off is worth a modest variance approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any public comment on this variance? Okay, seeing none, I will close the public comment. Thank you for the overview. I think you touched on a lot of the relevant issues here in terms of just a variation on the usability of what would be the otherwise typical buildable area for this kind of double lot scenario. It is a corner lot where the code does provide additional provisions for smaller lots, even though one of these is, as you mentioned, about 14% smaller than what the code would permit. But the home that's proposed on the substandard lot is fairly modest at only two stories. And for those reasons and the other reasons you listed, I would be inclined to grant with the standard conditions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving to item number 10, case number 2018-007602 VAR, 1030 Leavenworth Street, rear yard variance sought. Is the project sponsor here? Okay, moving back to item number 4. Case number 2018-004200 VAR 2828 Jackson Street, front setback variance sought. Project sponsor here. Moving to item number 5, case number 2017-010670 VAR 421 Walnut Street, rear yard variance sought. Is the project sponsor here? You have 5 minutes, sir.
I am here. Can we wait a little longer till the owner shows up too? She wanted something to say as well.
The challenge is that we have several projects where we don't have anyone here, and So
that's okay. I mean, we can hear it now. I have some information from her too.
I think we should go ahead and move forward.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
Hold on.
I get a sense that parking is challenging today.
Okay, thank you. Hello, Mr. Teague, Ryan Knox speaking. I'm the project architect and the project sponsor for the proposed expansion at 421 Walnut Street. Thank you today for your consideration for the rear yard variance request for this property, variance from section 134 of the planning code. As you can see from the site plan, the subject property has a flag configuration with a shared driveway dedicated via an easement of approximately 75 feet in length. This driveway leads to the existing residence and attached garage, which was built in 1916 and is a Class C building, not a significant structure historically. The entire existing building is in the legislated rear yard of the property and occupies a single story with 760 square feet of living space and 430 square feet of garage space. The surrounding residential buildings are primarily located between 30 and 45 feet away, with the exception of 3435 Sacramento, which is approximately 2 feet away, but it's located diagonally from the existing building. The project submitted and originally desired was a three-story, 3,088 square foot single-family home. The owners and I work with RDAT extensively to remove the top floor, create additional setbacks, and significantly reduce the area and massing to where it stands now at 1,885 square feet. The project keeps a low profile and slope roof form to respect the surrounding mid-block open space and has significant dimensional setbacks from the surrounding structures. There's a few statistics I'd like to share. So the allowed building sizes for this zoning range from, for a conventional 100 foot by 25 foot lot with a 40 foot height limit are floor area ratio of 1:8 are approximately 4,500 square feet. The FAR for our property is 0.55:1 or 27% of the FAR that would be allowed for this zoning conventionally. Typical lot coverage allowed for the zoning are 55%. That would be the buildable area after you take out their rear yard setback. Our lot coverage for this is 46%. The allowed height is 40 feet. Our structure is at 24 foot 6 inches. And the heights of the adjacent structures range from 30 feet to 40 feet and are from 3 to 4 stories. Finally, the setback for the proposed building to adjacent structures ranges from 29 to 37 feet right now. And the second floor setback for the proposed building are equal or less to the existing than what's there right now, except for there's one south setback, which is 1 foot closer than what's there existing. The purpose of the code is to allow building while protecting adjacent property rights. In particular, section 134 of the code is intended to preserve the rear yard, and the residential design standards are designed to protect the mid-block open space formed by multiple rear yards. This is just a view kind of the existing condition there with the proposed structure in the middle, the kind of block shape. And this is an aerial of the proposed proposal we have. So this proposal, although entirely within the rear yard, expands only modestly on an existing nonconforming structure and does so in a way that's sensitive to neighboring buildings and properties. The first floor expansion extends only modestly in approximately 7 feet only. The single story addition occupies less than one half of the proposed first floor plate, has a slope roof form as set back from neighboring properties and structures. There's no feasible way to build a new structure in the legally buildable area of this property. It's entirely over the existing access driveway, which is also an easement. It's 11 feet 7 inches, It's very narrow. And I don't think there's any way we get egress out of there with a stair and a conforming building that meets all the light and air requirements. So I would request that you approve this request for a rear yard variance, as the other properties in the zoning district are allowed expansions in multitudes of what we have proposed, and there's no legal buildable alternate on this property. We comply with all the RDAT requests for the massing reductions due to adjacent yards and properties. The best family should be able to build a family-sized home with a suitable layout for such home, with the bedrooms upstairs, living spaces downstairs, and a garage. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak on this item? Please come forward.
You have 3 minutes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Kelly Robertson, and I live at 431 Walnut Street. I think the architect has done actually quite a good job in adjusting the building proportions in order to respect the neighborhood, but still, or the immediately adjacent properties. But there's still some issues, because when the vertical extension is added to the top of the building, it will create significant shadowing of sunlight into the backyards of 425 Walnut and 431 Walnut, and the lower apartments in those buildings will have less sunlight in the afternoons. So that's one concern I have. And in addition to that, there's a neighbor nearby. Her name is Gail Boyer. She lives at 3316 California Street, and she's been in contact with Christopher May. Gail has very severe pulmonary issues and some vision issues created by some heart medication. And she feels that the construction process and materials will be, could be further detrimental to her health. So she lives inside with air purifiers running constantly. So any, you know, roofing materials or paints or chemicals and their gases could be further detrimental to her health, as I said. But she's in contact with Christopher May, as well as the mayor's Office of Disabilities, in order that she has a voice in this process as well. So I just wanted to mention those two points, is the extensive shadowing and somewhat more limited visual access for the apartments on Walnut Street into the mid-block open space, and as well as Gail's health issues that could be exacerbated by the process. That's it.
Just very quickly on the shadowing issue, are you suggesting that there should not be a vertical addition, or that the vertical addition should be reduced?
Well, if the vertical addition could be reduced, if the southern edge of it is pushed a little farther north, mm-hmm. that might help. And also, if it's possible to decrease the overall height, I don't know what decrease would be possible.
Okay. Thank you.
So, thank you for your time.
Sure.
You also get 3 minutes, ma'am.
Thank you. Hi. So I'm Diane Blattner. I work as the director of operations at Kendall Wilkinson Design, which is located in we're on 3419 Sacramento Street, and we share the driveway with the 421 Walnut. And our concern is that we use that driveway every single day. And also, and as the architect mentioned, it's a very narrow driveway. And so when the construction is going on for 14 months or possibly longer, we're not going to have access to the two parking places that we pay rent for, and the construction noise and the debris, and also security. We spoke to the architect yesterday, and you know, what we want is to make sure that our access to our storage facilities and our parking places isn't limited by the construction. And I just can't see how that's going to happen. And so the two employees who parked that back there, we would have to relocate their parking and pay for it. We're an interior design firm. We use both our garage and our basement for storage, and sometimes we have to load things in and out for our clients. And so we, the reason that I'm speaking today is that we just want to make sure that if the project is approved, that the people who use that driveway still have access to the services that we rely on to do our business. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you know, is there any easement or any other legal agreement for your company or the property owner to use that driveway access?
I'm sorry, I don't know. I've only worked with Kendall for about 2 months, so right. Haven't looked at the lease. I don't know what it is, but I'm happy to provide the information from the landlord.
Sure, and I can ask the same of the project sponsor. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Is there any other public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, the project sponsor, you have time to follow up.
You have 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I just wanted to try to bring up the major issue, I think, is in terms of the light access to the adjacent properties. So, we worked with RDAT to extensively lower the roof form and do setbacks throughout the entire property. There's a 5-foot setback along that would be the east side, which would affect the rear yards. That 5-foot setback is the first floor. The second floor actually has a 10-foot setback from that rear yard. So we have already explored doing the setback. I might be able to talk to the owner about possibly adjustments to the roofline. Since she isn't here at the moment, I can't speak for her, but that'd be something I'd be willing to discuss a little bit further. In terms of Mrs. Boyer, so a lot of this, I'm just trying to play catch up a little bit. Lots of these emails came in to me on Monday this week, Monday and Tuesday, so I haven't had a lot of time to prepare responses to all this. What I could find is that from what we can find, we're not certain that Ms. Boyer actually still lives at the property she says she does. It just seems from a White Pages search, it seems like she may actually live in Florida at the moment. So that's something I would like to try to confirm with her. Ms. Best has been in contact with her throughout the project early on. From my speaking with the owner, Ms. Best, and her discussion with Ms. Boyer was that Ms. Boyer was not necessarily opposed to that point. This was around the time that the pre-application occurred 2 years ago, that she just didn't want any more units to the property. I wrote a response to Ms. Boyer this morning to try to address some of her concerns. There's some things we can possibly work on doing, other things I'm not sure that could be as feasible. And then in terms of the parking to the adjacent properties, we have no plans to block the easement, block the driveway, any of that. I've asked the owners to dig up any CC&Rs on the easement for that area just to see if there's any limitations in that area. Once I have that information, I will pass it on to the planning department. We have no intentions of blocking either of those spaces. We can use the existing garage space that's in the existing garage during construction. And there's, from what I can tell, there's plenty of room to park one more truck behind that. If necessary, we can pump concrete in from the street. We're willing to limit some of the access hours to the property and work with them about notifying them in advance so that their use of the parking spaces is not interrupted in any significant manner.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm trying to take a look and see. Do you know what I'm looking at the plans now, but it's running a little bit slow. Just trying to get an understanding of the ceiling height provided right now for the second floor. It looks like it's 9 feet to the eave, but the actual interior ceiling height might be a bit higher on the second floor. Is that something you could clarify?
Yes, I think we're looking at the building sections. Is that right?
Correct.
Yes, correct. It's 9 feet on the interior at the eave and 11 foot at the ridgeline there.
But on the interior,
those are the interior dimensions.
The ceiling height. So I'm just looking at. This is A41. And it shows the 9 feet. Uh, has 9 feet at the eave, but then 11 feet at the ridge. Is the interior roof sloped on the second floor?
Correct, it is. The interior roof is sloped per the, are you looking at drawing 2 on A4.1?
A4.1, yeah.
A4.1, in the upper left-hand corner, there's a transverse section that shows that. I'll put that up.
We are still working on this. Thank you. It's the difference right there between hard copy and digital.
Yeah.
It's definitely a difference to work on. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So obviously, there's a couple issues here. I do agree that you guys have done a great job, it seems, to really be responsive to RDAT and their comments on how to scale this down to be more appropriate, considering its kind of unique mid-block location. There's clearly an exceptional and extraordinary circumstance here. I mean, the location and the size of the property are unusual, and there's definitely justification for something to be done here. I think obviously the devil's in the details. Two things moving forward I want to look into before rendering a decision is having that discussion and analysis to see if there are any other ways to reduce the mass of the second and height of the second floor without really reducing significantly floor area or internal design. And I would also like to, if you're going to do a little more digging on the actual flagpole and the access to the parking, and if there is any actual easement there, that'd be helpful to know. It is helpful that you think that regardless, there shouldn't be access to their parking, but we do want to dig into that a little bit more to try to make sure there aren't any contractual obligations in that area that we need to be aware of. So with that, I will take this one under advisement. Thank you.
We are going back to item number 4, case number 2018-0042-00VAR, 2828 Jackson Street. Is the project sponsor here? 2828 Jackson Street.
Okay. For that one, just FYI, I'm not going to continue it. We'll just consider it heard.
Okay, so are you going to make a decision on that item?
I'm just taking it under advisement.
Under advisement, mm-hmm. Okay. And also, we are going to call item number 7. Case number 2019-005924VAR, 400 Crescent Street, rear yard variance sought. Project sponsor?
The project sponsor is coming in 5 minutes. Is that
for Crescent?
For Crescent. Yeah, Rodrigo Santos, the project sponsor.
Do we have any other items left to call?
Item number 10.
Item number 10?
Yes.
We can call item number 10 for now.
Item number 10, case number 2018-007602VAR, 1030 Leavenworth Street, rear yard variance sought. Project sponsor, you have 5 minutes, ma'am. You're not a... The agenda is the official designation of the cases. So this is...
Well, we can't... I mean, Nancy asked me about it, but we can't change the calendar the day before the hearing after we have publication requirements. So there may have been a misunderstanding. I'm not sure, but we were pretty clear that we can't. Okay. Well, we can follow up on that and address the miscommunication, but we can't move it to consent once the agenda is published.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Can you please approach the mic here because we are being taped. So
sorry.
Thank you.
1030 Leavenworth. What we're looking to do is expand the existing wine cellar. The new plan has us going out to near the property line on all three sides. And the existing cellar has a permit history and has been in place, so there's not going to be any kind of visible change to any of the neighboring properties there. The rear yard used to have a cover over it. We're removing that, bringing it up to code. And we show a 10-foot tall code-compliant fence and wall on all three sides. And we're putting an addition at the top level at the roof. We've met all the RTD guidelines and our planning comments. and are meeting all the setbacks requirements from the sides, giving it less bulk, making it much lighter for the south-facing neighbor. And the front facade, the overall character, we're trying to keep it to remain the same. This is the owner's family house, so we're just kind of looking to maintain that kind of language.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public comment. This was an interesting situation, just the history of how this rear space was developed over time. Essentially, what's being kept is going to be similar to what we would allow for fencing in the rear. And so considering the nature of that, the developed nature of the block, and the long-time history of how the lot has been developed, I would intend to grant with standard conditions.
Great. Thank you.
So can we, what happened to the gentleman who has 400 Crescent?
Yes. And I saw he was here and then he left, which was, he should stay here.
Let me read off this item. This is item number 7, case number 2019-005924 VAR, 400 Crescent Street, rear yard variance sought. Project sponsor, please approach the mic. You have 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you very much. My name is Rodrigo Santos. I'm a structural engineer for Santos and Urrutia. Rory Teague, good morning. The issue here is related to attempting to memorialize a reconstructed section of a building at 400 Crescent Avenue, who happens to be the home of the Islamic Center of San Francisco, that services primarily the southeast section of San Francisco. It has a very large membership. It has been in existence for quite a few years. We were approached initially to assist them in responding to a notice of violation that was issued by the Department of Building Inspection. That happened a couple years ago. The violation stated that a section of the building had been removed without the benefit of a permit, and a portion of a foundation had been poured. When we visited the site, we obviously concur with the findings of the Department of Building Inspection. And we suggested a meeting with the members of the Islamic Center. During that meeting, I stated to them that it's going to take a fairly lengthy process to be able to not only memorialize the conditions that were built without a permit, but also to incorporate this particular section that had been demolished, primarily because it happened to be on the required rear yard. So I advised them that this will be a fairly painful process, but we have reasons to believe that ultimately planning will validate the construction of this area within a multi-building section of 400 Crescent Avenue. The reason why I was fairly optimistic at that point is I was told that the mosque cannot operate without the benefit of a washroom. In this particular area that had been demolished had been a washroom for the mosque. We wanted to make sure that whatever was built within that area, not only was it structurally code compliant, but at the same time, since we were going to be facing planning, perhaps we felt that it might be the opportune time to introduce additional spaces that the mosque used to be able to operate in the successful manner that they've been doing for years. So not only are we on this variance petition recommending the validation of the washroom, but we're also introducing a second story, which is an office that will be placed vertically over the washroom area. The Islamic Center and the members of the Islamic Center recognized that they took steps that perhaps they should have consulted a structural engineer or an architect before they removed that section of the building. However, they are fully capable of not only making sure that this building is properly built with the right permits, but at the same time, they want to make sure that they welcome the neighbors and the neighbors' concerns regarding the property. Prior to this variance hearing, there was an outreach, which is, as you know, mandatory before a variance of this type. And we were quite pleased that, for the most part, the neighbors felt that the Islamic Center was a great contributor to the neighborhood. And they offered any type of support in regards to making sure that the Islamic Center is able to not only operate successfully the way they've been doing it for years, but at the same time improve on their ability to serve the public by creating this washroom area and at the same time that office above the washroom area. That concludes my presentation, and Mr. Corey-Teague, if you have any questions.
Thank you. Are there any members of the public here who would like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing no members of the public, we will close the public hearing. Just for the record, I will state that we did receive an email with concerns from a neighbor on Crescent Avenue, generally concerned about kind of a history of some work being done without permits, concerned about the accuracy of the plans, some concerns about just the intensification of the use and the impacts on parking and traffic. Those are the primary issues. I mean, I think it's clear that at this point, the purpose of this variance and this permit is going to be to clean up everything and legalize everything. So that's really the purpose of this in context of any work that's been done without a permit. It's clear that there's no parking provided here. This the issue of members getting to the facility is a common issue for all religious facilities. There one issue that was raised that I did just want to check is that the neighbor thought that it was possible there were some type of kitchen facility here, and that's obviously not listed on the plans, but I don't know if there is any kitchen facility or if there's ever or just events where people bring in food, et cetera, and yeah, anyone in your group can speak to that.
Sure. Alexander Santos from San Sanrutia will respond to those questions.
Thank you.
So the kitchen, or the structure that services the kitchen is 705 Andover, mm-hmm. which is the building outside, right directly to the south of 400 Crescent. Mm-hmm. And it's actually connected, but it is a separate lot.
Gotcha.
So it's, on my site plan, it's the lot adjacent to the south, mm-hmm. but it is connected with a door between the two structures.
Okay.
So that could be confusing. It seems like it's all interconnected, but in fact, it is a separate lot.
Okay. Thank you very much. Like I said, I did receive that one. That's the only comment of concern that I'm aware of that we've received. The building permit hasn't moved forward with 311, so that's a whole separate process.
Sure.
that will be separate. I will state that for the variance, though, I think this is, the use itself is a legal non-conforming use. There are limits on how much it can expand without a CU. This is basically right up to those limits, but within it. And the type of expansion that's being proposed isn't really going to be expanding kind of the assembly area. It's not going to represent what would really be a significant increase in the intensity in terms of number of members or the capability of the facility to hold more more people during services. Obviously, having the washrooms is necessary. This is an exceptional, extraordinary circumstance related to the specific use of the site. It's also interesting that if you look at the pattern all the way between Andover and Arnold, basically every northwest corner lot has a building that is 2 to 3 stories that is essentially built out close to full lot coverage. It's kind of an interesting pattern that is for this string of lot blocks here that you have this kind of similar pattern. And in terms of impacts that massing would have on a mid-block open space for a residential block, I mean, the northwest corner is far better than the southwest or the southeast corner in terms of impact. So, and at only 2 stories, that's not a significant situation, especially considering the building itself is already, for the most part, 2 stories. So I'm generally supportive of the variance. It is fairly limited in scope, and it is providing needed amenities for this type of facility. So with that, I would be inclined to grant with the standard conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kowartik. Thank you.
That should be the end of our calendar, except unless the project sponsor is here for 2020 Jackson Street. They're not, so.
Okay. Is there any general public comment on any items that are not on the agenda today? Please come forward.
Please approach the mic, ma'am. Yes, yes.
I came for something that was continued. Was there a way to find out about the continuance before I came?
Which item was this for?
On the Vallejo?
Vallejo?
Yeah.
Sure. So that was the request for the continuance only was finalized yesterday morning after consultation between the project sponsor and various neighbors. Mm-hmm. And so essentially when projects are proposed for continuance, we deal with that at the very beginning of the calendar. Mm-hmm. So that's when we dealt with it. It was continued to the December 5th.
Yes,
hearing.
Yes, yes. I'm just curious if there was a notification, so I came in, there's nothing happened, right?
Right.
So there's a way I could have found out that I didn't need to come?
There's no way to have found out before.
Okay.
I mean, unless someone from the project sponsor or another neighbor who is aware that that was what was being proposed would have told you.
Yeah, okay.
In terms of like public notice, we notice the hearing, and then once you come to the hearing, the project could be continued, it could be heard. That's mm-hmm. That basically happens at the hearing.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, no problem.
I came late. Did you already finish the 1806 to 1810 8th Avenue?
So that one was actually continued also to December 5th because its notification poster was torn down. And so there for more than 10 days, I believe, so it had inadequate notice.
Oh.
So that one was moved or continued to December 5th as well.
And so I'll get a new notice, you think?
That one, there will not be a new notice going out because once we notice it and we have it at the hearing and we announce at the hearing that it's going to be continued, they will be putting up a new poster, but there won't be a new notice.
Okay.
That item was on the consent calendar. And consent means that we essentially don't really have a hearing unless it gets pulled off of consent. So if you have any concerns or questions about this project, I would definitely encourage you to reach out to the project planner and the project sponsor.
And these places on the bottom maybe too as well?
Yes.
Yeah, the project planner.
Oh, the planner. Okay, perfect. Okay,
yes.
Thank
okay.
you so much.
Sure, no problem. Okay, is there any other general public comment? Okay, seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.